You are listening to the Inside ECAC Hockey Podcast with Bertie Corbett.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to this week's edition of Inside ECAC Hockey. Inside ECAC Hockey this week on the men's side, we're going to be joined by the head coach, his third season with the Dartmouth Big Green, Reid Cashman. Reid, welcome to the show, and the Big Green waking up the echoes at Thompson Arena. It was a festive and raucous atmosphere, and one that I think you told me just a while ago, harking back to your first experience as a player going up there with the Bobcats of Quinnipiac.
Yeah, it was a really, really fun weekend at Thompson. You know, I think it's one of the premier atmospheres in college hockey when the building's full, and it's got great history, and the fans are on top of you, and so to have the 3,000 people there on Saturday night, and for our guys to experience it and for them to come watch and see a really good product and two good teams. So exciting up in Hanover.
Indeed. Big weekend with the visitors from the South there with Quinnipiac and Princeton coming up in the house this weekend. Two very different types of games that you played there. And the game, I know, maybe a little bit of extra significance when it's Quinnipiac because of you being a former Bobcat, former member of the staff with Rand Pecknell. I'm sure, not that you don't get up for all of them, but there's got to be a little bit more of a jump in the step when you take a look over there and see one of your mentors, Rand, on the other bench, who's had such great success.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I have a long history and former roommate with Joe Dume. We lived together for 2 years in college. So, but probably more so is just the defending national champion, and they're the kind of the gold standard in the ECAC. And so, though that's a unique challenge playing them, and for us to find those 2 points, and you know, kind of how we did it on Friday night was with a really good penalty kill and trying to limit their chances and then being opportunistic. And then to your point, a kind of a different way to win on Saturday.
Yeah, on Friday, you mentioned 5-for-5 on the PK against a team that certainly has a pretty high skill level, and indicative of them being the defending national champions and having some pretty high-end talent up there in the skill area. And really heartening to see, when you talk about the growth of a team and the resiliency of a team, you got the game time goal with about 4 minutes left. So, I mean, that's impressive in and of itself.
Yeah, we've had some good third periods, and we've talked a lot about last year we struggled in the third. You know, most hockey games are one-goal games. That's just the way our sport is. And in the third period, we weren't good enough last year, and we've talked about it, and we've tried to embrace that. And, you know, early in the year, it's been a major focal point. So versus Harvard, we were down going into the third. We were able to come back and tie that one. And then Quinnipiac, really, we were down 1-0, and we were down 2-1. And it speaks to, I think, the character of our room of guys just believing and to stick with it and to come back versus that program, you know, means a lot for us.
And you get a little extra by winning the shootout in the third round. Speaking of shootouts, the far cry from when I saw 18 rounds, I mean, my God, that was longer than Ali Frazier to go 18 rounds with anybody. But three rounds, and thank you very much to the locker room. That was probably pretty good psychologically as well as anything else.
I would say we were comfortable with the shootout after the Harvard experience. I would say every guy on the bench was comfortable if they had to go. But thankfully, Nikita Nikora ended it in the third round.
Indeed. Third round, and it was over. Third round knockout, as it turned out. And again, much, much different type of game against Princeton. Good teams, developing, emerging teams. You got to win them in different ways. I know you go around college hockey, you talk about a race to 3 or maybe 4. You needed 5 to dispatch Princeton on Saturday and get contributions from the blue line. Case in point, C.J. Foley. Give us some insight about him as a freshman. Great offensive contribution for him with a 3-point night.
Yeah, and totally different game. You know, we gave up 2 penalty kill goals in the first. We scored, so our power play kind of bails us out, our team offense. And then we're up 4-2 in the third, and we let them tie it, but then come back and score in the last minute. So, again, finding different ways to win and get points. You know, we played with 5 defensemen all weekend because of injuries. 3 of those guys were freshmen. And CJ, you know, all of them are playing lots of minutes, but CJ's transition to college hockey has been, you know, pretty smooth. He's an elite skater. He thinks the game at a really high level. You know, he's running a power play for us right now, and he's gotten chances, you know, the first 3 games. So to finally pop a couple in the fourth, I think will be, he can take a breath because he's been getting lots of chances. But again, his skating and the way he thinks it has allowed him to transition to college hockey.
A guy that you expected, it sounds like, coming in from what, BCHL, that was going to have an impact on your offense, not just in the defensive zone?
Yeah, I would just say, he was going to get an opportunity based off our numbers. We have four freshmen. We just have one that are hurt. But all four of those were recruited to get an opportunity. And then I don't think we're any different than lots of programs, but RD are expected to be in the offense. I don't think you get consistent offense in college hockey without the D being a part of it. And we certainly practice that way and we preach it. And to our D's credit, they've been extremely active and making good reads.
And again, bodes well when you look at it, you get the game winner in the final minute. I mean, that's another thing that I think you can impress and point to in terms of the type of success and being able to play a full 60 or maybe 65.
Yeah. There's going to be adversity every game. That's just the reality of our sport. There's going to be ebbs and flows. And so we talk about, you know, your first shift and your next shift, and that's mm-hmm. really all you have. Right. And so Princeton is extremely talented, well-coached. They came at us in the third, made some plays, and they tied it. And we could have, you know, folded and tried to get to overtime. And to our guys' credit, they came out and had two really good shifts. And like I said, we were able to get that game winner.
And big nights also offensively. Braden Dorfman had a goal and two. He had one and two. And Nikita Nakora, the aforementioned, with three assists for the night. He's also been a big part of that shootout mode for you. Just to give us some insight about those guys and your expectations, I'm sure, for them to raise the level even higher for their offense during the course of the year.
Yeah, you know, I'll talk about Braden Dorfman first, junior for us, you know, had a really impressive spring and summer and has come in with a enhanced mindset, I would say, has added a half a step to his skating, has always thought it at a really high level, but now he's got a little bit more skating to his game. He's a little bit physically stronger and it's having an impact. And, you know, he's getting points. He scored a really nice goal on the power play, but his other points are based around work and creating a turnover. Like the first assist, he creates a turnover with a great stick and that gets the puck to Nikita, which ends up in CJ scoring. And so really happy with, you know, you need upperclassmen to win in college hockey, right? You need guys to get better every year. And Doris, one of those guys that's gotten better every year and is looking to take a step now as a junior and be a leader on our team. And then Nikita, you know, we're putting a lot on him. He's on our first line. He's on our top power play. You know, he's a little bit like CJ, where elite hockey IQ, and then, you know, a different kind of skill set. So he's one of those players as a coach that you got to give him a little bit of rope because he can think the game and he makes some plays that the other guys don't. And probably the thing my biggest compliment to Nikita and what probably we love about him the most as a staff is he is on the ice constantly. This guy loves the game. Like he is, if we have two goalie sessions, he's shooting both of them with Tapper to get extra work in. And then after practice, he's asking what he can do more. And then he's going to our strength coach to see if he can get an extra lift in. And then he's in our shooting room. This morning, he was in our shooting room shooting some pucks. He's just a kid from, you know, St. Petersburg, Russia, that loves the game and puts the work in. And because of that, he's earned a really big role for our program.
No, indeed the case. Special teams, they always loom large, Coach. It's early in the season. It's even earlier in the season for the ECAC teams in terms of playing for real. Your assessment to this point, you did get a big night the other night, big contribution on the power play unit. And as you mentioned, the PK has certainly had their moments here in the early going to preserve some wins for you.
Yeah, I think our power play has gotten better every game. You know, it's about chances, momentum. We talk about that all the time. You know, the best power plays in the country are going to fail 7 out of 10 times. So it can't be based on scoring. It's just, you know, we got to create chances and create momentum. And I thought this weekend was better than the previous weekend. And we're working at that. So that was a good sign. And then to get the two goals on Saturday, it will be a confidence booster as we go into Ithaca. We know how hard those are to come by. You know, penalty kill. Happy with the result on the first three games, you know, but disappointed with some of the chances we've given up. You know, you can't give up chances off the rush on the PK. And we did that versus UNH, and then we did it versus Princeton. So we got to clean up our PK forecheck. I think it's probably priority number one. And then just keep getting these young guys reps. But it's nice how they've complemented each other to help us get points early in the year. But for us to have sustained success, there's no doubt our penalty kill and our power play both have to continue to improve.
Absolutely. Limit those clean entries, Coach.
Yeah. You can't give them possession. You certainly can't give up goals. But I think the best penalty kill forechecks force power plays to dump. And then now you got a chance to at least go retrieve and win some battles.
Indeed. Just let it go to a battle in those situations. Goaltender Cooper Black, he's been an Iron Man here from the early going, the first couple of weekends. The position overall, the competition at the position, and the fact that that he's emerged and got off to a great start for you.
Well, Coop played every game for us. Started every game for us last year. We had a senior and two freshmen, Coop and then Mikey Roberts. Both him and Mikey had really good summers. Improved. Coop obviously has that experience. And then we brought in a freshman in Rowan Clark. And what I would say is our goaltending room is highly competitive. These guys are pushing each other. There was some internal competition, or maybe last year there wasn't as much. And because of experience, because of Coop's, results so far, he's taken the net. There's only one net, and we talk about it with recruiting, and right now Coop has it. But with that being said, Mikey and Roan are pushing hard, and it's nice we have some depth and we have some more internal competition, and it'll be interesting how it goes from there. But happy with our entire goaltending room.
Great to have that competition and the depth at the position, all important. And you got a good one with Jason Tapp, the former goalie that I know he works as kind of a, I referred to him at Union, who's laying on the defensive coordinator at Union. So I know the defense and working with the goaltenders also.
Yeah, I mean, Tapper's the best goalie coach in the country. I just go through the last 14 years of what his goalies have done at Union and now at Dartmouth. The first goalie we had here, Clay Stevenson, was on the opening night roster in Washington. And it's every goalie he works with seems like to sign an NHL or an AHL contract. And then actually he's even added more to his role this year where he's working with our offense.
The
way he sees the game, he sees it from that goaltender's lens. Yep. And that's really helped with communicating with our team offense and what's a goalie thinking, what's the goalie's reads. And I think that's helping us gain some traction with our team offense.
No doubt. That's a good point. You look put the point counterpoint there, counterattack in that area. I know reading from your comments over the course of the offseason that the fact that you knew you were going to have essentially the same team back from last year. There's a couple of departures and a couple of transfer situations, but you were very optimistic. Once again, the offseason, it seems like you had a really exceptional offseason of these guys coming together, and the fact that they all kind of got a baptism of fire last year. A lot of these guys maybe played before the expectation was that how much they were going to play, but they went through that, and now it seems like that they're benefiting from that this year.
Yeah, I would say the last 2 years, our guys that have been here for 2 years have gone through a lot, and they made a choice in the spring that they wanted to do some things differently, and they wanted to make adjustments to give us the best chance to maximize our program. And so we had 18 guys here all spring. Our strength coach, Skyler, did a fantastic job with those guys. 5 days a week before class, they woke up every morning and got themselves to become better athletes. And it carried through in the summer, and they showed up in the fall. And I think they just want to give themselves, like I said, the best chance to have success. And I think they didn't love the results the last couple of years. And what's been nice is through two weekends that they've been rewarded for their hard work. And now the challenge is to keep going, right? We talk internally that output cannot be determined by outcome, right? So regardless of their loss, regardless of you had a good practice, a bad practice, what is the standard? What do we expect of each other? What do we expect of ourselves? And so that's been the challenge this week. Now, I think the best thing that's happened for us is we play Cornell on Friday. And yeah. So when we came to practice last night, it was, congrats on the weekend, and then, buckle up, because here we go. We got a top 10 opponent and one of the really good teams in the country and one of the great venues to play in college hockey. And so let's have a great practice today and carry it through the next day and keep trying to grow. Everything's about experience and then growing from the experience.
Well, Cornell, line of rink, that's going to get your attention. Sounds like it's got your attention and the attention of your team, Reid. And best of luck this weekend and beyond. Hope to visit with you again here on Inside ECAC Hockey.
Thanks, Bernie. Really appreciate it.
Reid Cashman, head coach of the Big Green at Dartmouth, our guest here this week on the men's side for Inside ECAC Hockey. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to this week's edition of Inside ECAC Hockey. On the women's side this week, it's a pleasure to join Matt DeRosier from Potsdam, New York, the head coach of the Golden Knights of Clarkson, getting ready for a big week. Big week that's starting midweek, as a matter of fact. A little bit of an unusual holiday schedule that we'll talk about, but nothing unusual about the start of his Lady Golden Knights here. My goodness, 11-0-1. Perfect 4-0 in the ECAC. And oh, by the way, a little bit of a classic North Country rivalry this weekend. I think a good starting point as I get ready to talk to you today, Matt, is we've got the, once again, what do the polls mean? What are the predictions? What do the coaches know when they do that coaches poll at the beginning of the year? But I believe we've got the 5 and 6 predicted teams in the ECAC in the early stages of November playing a 2-game series that have a combined record of 21-1-1. I don't know what that says about the ECAC. Maybe go find a new league.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bernie. Like we've been talking about it for years now, and you know, our coaches within our league talk about it all the time too. Just the strength of the ECAC. It's been put on display here for the last couple of years, and this year's no different. You're seeing a lot of teams starting to emerge as some contenders within the country in that. And, you know, you have 2 of them up here in the North Country.
No, indeed you do. And as far as your club, NCAA tournament qualifier a year ago, not unusual to have you in that position. But once again, just to battle your way out of the ECAC is quite a feat to get yourself in a good position for the NCAA tournament. More of the same this season. As someone's been around for a while, does it seem like maybe – even this season, as you came in, it was going to be exponentially tougher for you because of everybody, what they had back, what they had coming in, et cetera?
Yeah, for sure. Again, you've been seeing the depth within our league over the last couple of years, with especially with the amount of teams that were getting into the NCAA tournament. But I think a big part of that is just the types of games that you're playing night in and night out within the ECAC. You're pretty battle tested throughout the year. And then once you start getting into playoffs, you've already been in that kind of playoff mode for, you know, a month or two down the stretch, just battling to, you know, maybe even get home ice within the league. You know, we have so many teams that are ranked nationally that there's actually some ranked teams that may not get home ice in playoffs. So it's pretty crazy, but yeah, you're definitely seeing that again this year, you know, and you're even starting to see some other teams starting to emerge. Like even this past weekend, you know, we played Union and RPI, and, you know, they've been playing teams hard and, you know, winning some games, and they were very difficult games for us. They pushed us pretty good, even though the score may not be indicative of that, but, you know, those were pretty difficult games. So, you definitely can't rest on any team within the ECAC, and it just makes it that much more fun.
You mentioned going out of the Capital District this past weekend. Victory at Union 4-1, and your power play, which has been tremendous, your special teams we'll talk about. But the 2-for-3 on the power play to be able to get it done, and that's often, particularly on the road, you get that key power play goal and get a chance to get a leg up. It's oftentimes it's a big part of the formula for success.
Yeah, and that's what it was this weekend. Like, both games were pretty close, and, you know, it was kind of our special teams on both sides, our penalty kill and the power play, that kind of really started to separate the games for us a little bit. You know, our power plays got some key goals there, and our PKs were able to kind of, you know, make sure that we weren't giving up some goals at key moments in those games too, because they could have been very different games if our special teams weren't going strong. So that's something that obviously we work on quite a bit, and we're starting to see the fruits of it right now.
And if you want to talk about depth and balance, let's talk about it. You're 11-0-1 through 12 games. I just went through the numbers here getting ready to talk to you, and you got about a half a dozen players that are close to a point a game. And then you look up Saturday, and you got a player who gets a hat trick on Saturday that wasn't among them, with the Senna Catterall. What about her offensive game and how it stepped up and was such an important factor for you?
Yeah, the crazy thing is our game the night before at Union, we actually had to send her off the ice because she was so sick. I think she ate something that wasn't agreeing with her. So she had to take the third period off, and she was up all night kind of throwing up and everything. And we weren't sure if she was even going to play on Saturday. And then she comes out and gets a hat trick for us. So, you know, her whole game is just all about hard work, and every one of her goals were just, you know, I don't think she scored a goal that wasn't within 2 feet of the net. She was just battling hard around the net. But like you said, like it just goes to show the depth that we have on our team this year. You know, we're getting contributions up and down the lineup, whether it's scoring, whether it's playing good defense, whether it's just energy stuff on the bench, like whatever we kind of need. We have a lot of people kind of playing their part and doing their job and doing their role. So, you know, it's been great. It's been a lot of fun this year coming to practice, you know, just having that depth up and down the lineup.
You know, some of the players that have been mainstays for you over the last couple of years, you look at Nicole Gosling's right up there at the top of the scoring charts again. Do you see them? I know coaches, sometimes you get a perspective in the off season in terms of the work ethic and the preparation that some of these key players for you, do you think that they have another level? Do you think coming into this season, hey, it could be pretty special because they haven't got to where we think that they can get to yet?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what coaching is all about. Like having players that, you know, haven't reached their ceiling. You know, for us, it's fun to coach players that are continuing to get better and keep striving to make it to that next level. And Nicole's a great example of that. You know, she's had some time with Hockey Canada's program, but she continues to keep working at it. You know, she wants to become a mainstay within that program. And as she gets older, she's learning different things, you know, within our program. She's learning how to become more of a leader for us as well. And she's done a great job with that the last couple of years. But she's also taking that experience that she's gaining from, you know, going to Hockey Canada senior camp and being with those players that are involved on those senior teams and learning from them as well and bringing it back to our program. And so she's just got a good method about how she goes about her day-to-day business. And again, you're starting to really see the growth in her game, but also her as a person and a leader too, as we go on within her career.
She's right near the top, but Haley Wynn, you got to give us a comment on her start with 14 points, a plus 16, a dozen blocks. I mean, could you do any more in all three zones and be more of a 200-foot impact contributor?
Yeah, and that's something we focus on with our defensemen. You know, we want our D to get up into the play and add to the offense, whether it's in the offensive zone, off the rush, whatever it may be. But we also want them to obviously be good 200-foot players and play well, you know, through the neutral zone, on breakouts, you know, in the defensive zone. So we've worked quite a bit with Haley and all our other D on just kind of adding components to their game. And Haley's someone that just lives and breathes hockey. You know, we've had some pretty great players go through our program. And, you know, I haven't seen anyone that puts in the time and the effort that she does. She's just a rink rat. She's here all the time. She has her goals and her sights set on, you know, being with that national team, which she's on the team right now. You know, and that's something that she puts everything into, and you're starting to see it on the ice. You're starting to see it come out in the confidence that she has too. I think last year, her getting an opportunity to go to the rivalry series and then playing the world championships, that was a huge stepping stone for her and her confidence. And she's really brought that back to our program and her play this year. And again, I guess you can see why she is where she's at, you know, within our team, within the country, within our league, and why she was on that, you know, ECAC preseason team as well.
You're limiting opponents to, it's always the magic number, if you get under 20, you're limited to 17 shots a game. But when the shots do get through, you've got competition and you got a great tandem in goal. No doubt, Matt. Give us a little bit of insight about the two, how they compete, how they push each other, how they get along with each other in terms of battling for the net.
No, all of our goalies have been great. You know, they rink, they compete against each other. You know, we'll play little mini games, and they're competing against each other, maybe then more than the rest of the team. But they all get along. They all support each other. You know, they've done a great job. Our goalie coach has done a great job kind of getting them in a place and playing to their strengths. And, you know, both Julia and Michelle have done a great job for us when they've gotten in the net this year. Like you said, we do a pretty good job on the defensive side, and we limit shots pretty well. But they just give us confidence to be able to play that way as well. Like, we know that there are mistakes made that, you know, they're there to kind of bail us out. And when you have goaltenders that you have confidence in like that, you can play a lot different and play with a lot more confidence, you know, especially your defensemen that, you know, allow to make plays on breakouts. And, you know, if there is a mistake made that our goaltenders have been there to kind of make the big saves for us too.
I know some of your comments during the offseason, you looked at the decor returning from last year. You said good could be great. Are you working your way towards great right now? And what you aspire to is always a little something to get to the ceiling or break that ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're working our way there. You know, I'm a coach, so I'm never satisfied. They've been doing a great job. They're doing everything that we ask of them. They're improving in a lot of different areas. You know, we've been working a lot on getting them involved on the offensive side of the puck. And you can kind of see that when you watch our games, just how much movement that they have, you know, jumping up into the play in the offensive zone, moving off pucks, you know, working on getting shots through to let our forwards kind of battle it out around the net. You know, everything that we've kind of asked of them, they've put everything they have into it in practice. They push each other. They compete against each other. They work with each other. A lot of communication. They do a great job. You know, our team as a whole have just, like I said, made this year a lot of fun. They come to the rink every day ready to work. They have fun though. And then they're always looking for different ways to get better, whether that's through video skill sessions, anything that they can do. And, you know, I think our D are a big part of that as well.
And I noticed I always take a look at those power play opportunities to man down opportunities. You're dead even at 46, but you're plus +9 there, giving up just one power play goal. And credit to your special teams and your systems there, I'm sure, to put yourself in the most favorable position in those situations.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the great thing is we've been able to use a lot of different players, you know, both on the power play and on the penalty kill. So, again, that just goes to what we spoke about earlier about the depth of our team. You know, we're not relying on, you know, just a few kids to both PK and PP. Like, we're getting contributions up and down the lineup. And, you know, everyone, you know, puts a lot of pride in their role on this team. And you're starting to see that the success that comes with it, you know, and they understand too. We have a lot of conversations about it, how important special teams are, you know, especially when it comes crunch time towards the second half of the season, down the stretch, going into playoffs. So that's why we continue to keep working on it quite a bit in practice, you know, through a lot of video as well. You know, and everyone's just kind of taking it in and making sure that they're doing their part to for us to be successful on the special teams.
And one other player that I want to mention is kind of the wild card added to the deck, if you will, is Dominique Petrie coming from Harvard. I had familiarity with her from covering the Harvard women's team. Sat out last year, redshirted with an injury, but a really high-end skilled type of player that seems to have assimilated very well to you and your system. They're a great addition.
Yeah, we're really happy to have Dom here in our program. And, you know, obviously it was unfortunate last year that she had to miss the year with an injury. But she put a lot of work in to make sure that, you know, she got back and she was at full form coming into this season. And again, you're starting to see, you know, the fruits of all that hard work that she put in. She's done a great job with us as, you know, top line center in a lot of different situations, you know. Like you said, like, she's an offensive presence, but she's also really good on the defensive side, works really hard, is, you know, a big body out there that uses her size to her advantage, plays more of a power forward type of role. You know, you don't necessarily see that too often nowadays that that kids that have that type of skill are able to also, you know, play with that kind of edge and that grit a little bit. So she's kind of done a lot of different things for us. You know, she's been in every situation you can think of within our program. And again, another big thing too, she's been a great leader for us, you know, in the 2 years that she's been here.
Well, it's a little bit of a unique series. Once again, you've got a matinee. You've got a really, it's a morning game with St. Lawrence, 11 a.m. The kids of the North Country will be out there in full force. I saw 2,700. They're all getting bussed in from everywhere around the North Country to see some great hockey. That's a fantastic event for midweek to get the kids in and out of school.
Yeah, so Coach Wells and I, again, I've known Wellsy forever. He coached me actually at St. Lawrence. So
right.
We're always in constant contact in that. And, you know, we've talked about it for a few years here about possibly doing a kids game. I know when I played pro hockey, I played in a couple kids games, and they're a ton of fun, a ton of energy in that. And we had the FISU games here last year, and there was like a midday game that they were bussing some schools in, and the energy in the building was great. So Coach Wells and I had spoken about it, and we were able to kind of talk our way through it and be able to kind of plan this. And it's really exciting for everyone up here in the North Country too. Like we have the schools bussing in from, you know, an hour and a half away wow. to get here. There's a bunch of schools that are on a waiting list too. So, yeah, come 11 a.m. tomorrow, it's going to be a packed house. Our building here at Clarkson at Chile Arena is going to be sold out, and it should be exciting. These games are, I've been telling our players, it's pretty much just chaos. The kids just yell and scream the entire time. They're dancing. They're not really cheering for any particular thing. They're just cheering the entire game. So it brings a lot of energy in that. It should be fun. You know, that's kind of our market to, you know, catering mm-hmm. to the young kids in the community here. And we get out and do quite a few things within the local community at the schools and everything too. So, you know, we'll have some fans that have been here before, and I'm sure we'll have a bunch of kids that hopefully we can make fans for St. Lawrence and Clarkson in the future.
Absolutely. And great to just in particular for the young ladies in the audience, what better role models than the success at the collegiate level of these two programs? It's tremendous.
Yeah, for sure. Especially like right now, you got two highly ranked teams up here in the North Country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously both teams are playing really good hockey right now. So, you know, I know Coach Wells does a great job over at his program too, you know, getting his players out in the community and doing some different things. Like I know both programs have like kids clubs that they bring, you know, local youths in and do different things with. And, like you said, I think both programs, knowing the players that Coach Wells has and knowing him and his staff and what their values are and everything. And, you know, I know both programs, players are pretty good role models in the community here too. And they do a great job when they go out there, it's, you know, supporting the community. And, you know, both programs, I think, have seen some benefits of, you know, getting some of those local kids and their parents to become fans of the program.
I suspect your kids will be there, but they're probably there all the time, right?
Yeah, they're here all the time. Yeah, they pretty much live at the rink with us too. But yeah, they'll be there in full force.
Indeed. I got to ask you that question. When we first met, I remember interviewing you back and with the time. Do you miss coaching with your wife and, you know, going home and getting the chalkboard out at the table and, you know, the diagram of the power play in between courses and dinner? I mean, you miss that, or she kind of detached herself and say, I got other responsibilities here, and you worry about the power play and the PK.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. Now, it's not so much both of us are living and breathing the hockey side of things. You know, when we first started, we didn't have kids, and then that's eventually what led her to kind of getting away mm-hmm. from coaching. It was to start to have our kids, so it would have been a little bit difficult for us. But she definitely is a huge supporter of our program still. She still gives me some feedback on
sure.
What I'm doing as a coach. But honestly, though, I appreciate it, because that was one thing that I think allowed us to be successful as a coaching duo, is that we see things differently. You know, I may see something one way and she sees it a different way. So it was always good for us to kind of talk through those things and get each other's opinions. So I value the feedback that she gives, because there's certain things that, that may happen or that I do and make a call on that, you know, and she might tell me something otherwise that I might not even have thought of. So, again, she's a great hockey mind. She's still in hockey. She still does a lot around the community here with skill sessions and stuff like that too. So spends a lot of time with our kids and their hockey as well. But yeah, I definitely still value her opinion and I still ask her about certain things and what she would do in certain situations. And I don't think that'll ever stop.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if that's the salt, what do we do with the third high guy? You know, how high should he play?
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of things that that we can kind of communicate about. And plus now she's in the stands, so she can kind of see things a little bit differently too.
That's right.
So
different perspective.
A little bit higher and can see things and, you know, still question some of the things that I might do and say, I'm sure, but that's fine.
That's okay. Good to have that backup, that fail safe there. No question, Matt. And final question, I guess it's been a question I've been asking frequently. BU played UMass recently, so I was interviewing Greg Coughlin, and last week, Chris Wells. The Joe Mosh coaching tree, there's a lot of branches on that tree. You're one of them, and I'm sure that you stay in contact. You know, speaking of guys that check up on you or offer some insight and advice, is there anybody better than the guru of the North Country himself?
Yeah, Joe's great. Joe's great. He was great to play for. You know, he always respected his players. He asked a lot of his players, but he always had your back too. And that's something that I kind of took away from him, you know, into my coaching career as well. And, you know, still fortunate that I stay in contact with Joe as much as I possibly can. And been fortunate that there's been some like alumni events up here, you know, at St. Lawrence that I've still been able to kind of go back to and get a chance to kind of see him and talk to him and everything. So he's always been a great coach for me. I still call him coach. You know, he's a great mentor on the coaching side too, as far as just following his lead a little bit and then just kind of bouncing some things off of him too. So like you said, his coaching tree is quite large. And I think there's a reason for that for sure.
Indeed. And, you know, I got to come back my final comment here. And it's like, I can't believe we're almost 25 years removed from it, but I think of you when I see your name on the line chat of the Albany Marathon too. So that was a long journey from noontime till about 6:45, I think it was.
It was pretty crazy.
Gosh, I'll tell you, I've been doing this for a while.
It was pretty crazy to be a part of.
Yep. The five overtime. Yeah. For folks that don't know, it was a five overtime national tournament game, regional final between BU and St. Lawrence in Albany that started at noon and got off well after the streetlights went on at about 6:45, I guess, when it got over. So it was amazing. Surreal. Yep. You know, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, every once in a while that comes up on like a feed or something, or my alumni buddies will bring it up or something like that. And so it brings back some good memories, good and bad. It was great that we won the game, but you know, I think from the second to overtime on, I'm not sure if I passed the red line there. I was so tired.
Exactly. Your excuse for that. That was quite a day, quite a night. Matt, thanks very much. And 11 AM for a pretty big hockey game up there in Route 8 up there in the North Country. A pretty big game tomorrow at 11 a.m. And then you'll follow with a 2 o'clock start. It'll be a matinee on Veterans Day. So all the best moving forward. And thanks for coming on with us this week. We hope to have a chance to visit with you again here on Inside ECAC Hockey.
Thank you for listening to the Inside ECAC Hockey podcast with Bertie Corbett. Follow ECAC Hockey on social media @ECAC Hockey across all platforms.